When NSA leaker Edward Snowden first emailed filmmaker Laura Poitras, he used the moniker Citizen 4.
In the end, if you publish the source material, I will likely be immediately implicated. I ask only that you ensure this information makes it home to the American public. Thank you, and be careful. Citizen 4.
That's Poitras reading his email in a new documentary which follows the unfolding drama of Snowden as he revealed his evidence of widespread NSA surveillance to Poitras and her reporting partner Glenn Greenwald in June of 2013. Since then, we've heard much from Greenwald, but little from Poitras. Her film, Citizen 4, opens in wide release next week. New Yorker staff writer George Packer recently wrote about Poitras and the making of Citizen 4. He'd met Poitras years earlier, but he wasn't sure he'd be welcomed to join her in Berlin as she finished the film.
She approached me in 2004 after reading a piece of mine from Iraq in The New Yorker and said it showed me something in the occupation that I really want to try to capture on film. So what advice do you have? And we sat over coffee and talked for a long time. And next thing I knew, she had produced the most magnificent film about the Iraq War, My Country, My Country. But really, we'd fallen out of touch after maybe 2010. And I actually had written something rather critical about Snowden and Glenn Greenwald in a British magazine, Prospect, earlier this year, which I know Poitras read. So I wondered if she would be open to me coming. And I have to say I was really impressed that she let someone into her inner circle at a very sensitive moment of filming who she knew had some political disagreements. So I went to Berlin really in an intense moment at the last minute before the film was to be finished.
So you call Citizen 4 a political thriller in three acts.
Yeah, those are actually Poitras' terms of three acts. The first act sets up certain predecessors to Snowden, NSA whistleblowers like William Binney, Glenn Greenwald in Rio. We see him being interviewed by a radio station in the U.S. talking about Obama and surveillance and broken promises. We see Jacob Applebaum from WikiLeaks telling an Occupy Wall Street group about how the police will be on them for the rest of their lives. So it's kind of setting the context of what Poitras sees as, you know, dissidents being surveilled and persecuted for their political acts. And then from the very beginning of the film, she gets these emails from an anonymous stranger who goes by the handle Citizen 4. Act 2 is all set in the hotel room in Hong Kong where Poitras, Greenwald, and another Guardian reporter spent 8 days with Snowden getting the leaks and hearing his story and his account of his own motives. And that part of the film, I think, is the heart of the film. It's quite claustrophobic. But what we see is a more human Snowden over the course of these days as the tension starts to break him down a little bit. And the third act is all the consequences of the leaks.
You mentioned that the heart of the film taking place in the Hong Kong hotel room was claustrophobic. And what you experienced as the film was being finished was also infected with that pervasive sense of paranoia. Jacob Applebaum, the hacktivist from WikiLeaks, only wanted you to talk to him in a sauna, naked.
He said he wanted to take a sauna, and that's where he wanted to be interviewed. But later it occurred to me that, clever, that was one way to be sure I didn't have a concealed surveillance device on me. Around Poitras' circle in Berlin, which is kind of a surveillance expat circle, and you're often being told, leave the phone out of the room, or why did you bring a phone, or please shut your phone off. Applebaum, you know, takes a different route home, tells a taxi to come three doors down and across the street. As an outsider, I felt to some extent I can understand it. It may be an atmosphere that was necessary for Poitras to both keep the secrets of Snowden and to finish her work on the film. But in that tight and rather claustrophobic circle, there isn't a sense of proportion.
You say that her decision to edit out key material to protect the second source that we don't know about gave the ending of the film a quality of irresolution and anticlimax.
Yeah, perhaps inevitably. I'm not questioning her judgment about what was a potential risk for the source. But the final result is an ending that feels as if the viewer is being shut out rather than enclosed in it. You have a scene where Snowden is receiving scribbled notes from Greenwald to elude any Russian audio surveillance in this hotel room. The camera sometimes shows what's written in the note, sometimes doesn't. What we get are Snowden's reactions, raised eyebrows, shake of the head, curses, says, "I can't believe this. This is huge. This is dangerous. I hope this person knows what he's doing." And this could raise whistleblowing to a whole new level. And we just don't know what it's all about. And in fact, the two or three bits of information we do get are actually quite old and familiar.
Scoops that aren't really scoops. President Obama signs off on certain drone targets. We all knew that. The one big scoop we're allowed to see that is supplied by this second source is information about a government watch list containing 1.2 million names. And it's a reference, I assume, to the Terrorist Identities Data Mart Environment, or TIDE, which is something that Greenwald wrote about in August. It's been reported that hundreds of thousands of names are being added each month or something like that, and that it's basically a combined database of the CIA, the DIA, the FBI, the NSA, and so on. The government itself has touted TIDE.
You know more about TIDE than I do, but she told me at one point the documents interested her less than Snowden himself. And that's a completely of a piece with Poitras's work as a filmmaker. She is interested in human situations. She follows the story where it leads her in Iraq, in Yemen. Her second film, The Oath, she allows circumstances and the messiness of human life to take over. And that's absolutely the case in those first two films. She told me she likes to watch people make real-life decisions, to be confronted with decisions so that you're seeing them having to figure it out. And they don't give you a narrative they've already prepared, which is what happens when you sit down to interview someone. She doesn't interview people. She watches them live. Snowden, it was an interview, and he had already carefully constructed a narrative of being a conscience-troubled government worker who felt that the public had a right to make its own mind up about these big intrusive programs. That may well be true, but it's seldom the whole truth that what someone says is their motive is their only motive, and it's the filmmaker's task to try to keep peeling back the layers. And what's more, for me at least, that kind of high-mindedness, although it's admirable, is not necessarily interesting. It's kind of an open and shut matter.
And yet her craft and her heart created an enormous bond of sympathy, I think, between even a skeptical audience and her principal character. And Poitras's editor told you that it was clear from the raw footage that here in Snowden was someone who had decided to sacrifice his life.
You're absolutely right that she brought Snowden to life in a way that he really had not brought himself to life. He appears in that hotel room in some scenes in a white T-shirt or a white bathrobe. His skin is incredibly pale. It looks as if all the blood has been drained out of it. The bedspread is white. The pillows are white. The headboard is white. You have this sense that we're entering a realm of someone who's being prepared for sacrifice.
He almost reminded me of Murat Saad.
Or of, dare I say, the risen Christ. I mean, he says to Laura Poitras in an early email, "You will nail me to the cross." The interesting thing is Poitras has never seen all the footage. She couldn't really stand it. She'd let the editor, her editor, watch it. And the editor, Mathilde Bonnefoy, French-American editor, said to me that when she first saw it, she realized Snowden had already – he was like a suicide. He had already prepared for death. But at some point in that hotel room, he decided to live.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see him making that decision. When did he decide to live and why? I think because of her incredible identification with him, Poitras respects his privacy in a way that I'm not sure she would have in her earlier films with her earlier subjects.
In the aftermath, the third act, as it were, it could have shown many of Snowden's subsequent revelations had less to do with the potentially unconstitutional spying on civilians and more to do with legal intelligence operations abroad.
Right. And in fact, William Binney, who I think is one of Poitras's heroes, who's the original NSA whistleblower before Snowden, he told USA Today that he's a great supporter of Snowden's, but when he starts talking about hacking into China, he's actually leaving whistleblowing and moving toward treason. That's the word he used. That's something that Binney might have been asked about in that last act, but instead Binney is seen testifying against American surveillance in front of the German Bundestag. The answer, I think, is once we're out of the hotel room, Poitras is on a very powerful roll toward the conclusion. And I think Poitras is open about this. The film is not looking at both sides, is not trying to give equal time to the government position. It's not a frontline documentary in which we hear different voices expressing different points of view. It is a piece of activism as well as of artistry.
You wrote that for Poitras, what gave the story gravity was Snowden, but for you, it was Poitras herself.
Yeah, I mean, sitting with her in Berlin for many hours talking about the film and about her career, her work, as we were sitting there, her face began to appear to me like some Victorian artist. That sensitivity, that kind of dignity, and a sort of self-restraint that is no longer really part of the artistic profile, but is still very much part of Laura Poitras. And I saw that person being pulled into this world of Snowden and of secrets, WikiLeaks, and of surveillance. I don't think that world is an altogether healthy world for artists of great sensibility. And I didn't tell her this, but I'll tell you. I wanted to tell her, you know, don't do a follow-up, which she might well do because she has a lot more material. Make your next film about something really different because I don't want you to be lost in this world. I don't know. I almost wanted to reach out and pull her back.
George, thank you very much.
It's always fun.
George Packer is a staff writer at The New Yorker. He wrote about Laura Poitras and her new film about Edward Snowden, Citizen 4, in the October 20th issue of the magazine.